Coming up on Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, we're talking about science in my backyard, an idea that I have. With me, Dr. Kiki. That's coming up next on Dr. Kiki's Science Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Dr. Kiki's Science Hour with me, Dr. Kiki. Episode number 138, recorded Thursday, March 29th, 2012. Science in my backyard. This episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. This is Dr. Kiki Science Hour, and I'm Dr. Kiki Sanford. Welcome once again to the show, where you get to spend an entire hour talking about something interesting in the science disciplines or related to science, science communication, usually with an expert in that topic. But, you know, sometimes I like to mix it up a little bit, and today is one of those examples. Today we're going to have a conversation. So I hope that you are ready to dig in to a little talking between you and me. That's you. You out there. You in the chat room. And me. We're going to chat about an idea. I hope you're ready to dig in, get a little dirty, think about stuff a little bit, because I have an idea about sharing, and I'd love your feedback about it. But first, we have to get into a few science headlines. It is Thursday, March 29th, 2012, and this is the science that made headlines this week. A study in the journal Science this week takes our understanding of the brain to a higher resolution. Literally, according to Van Weeden, the lead author of the paper, the brain is, quote, far from being just a tangle of wires. The brain's connections turn out to be more like ribbon cables, folding 2D sheets of parallel neuronal fibers that cross paths at right angles, like the warp and weft of a fabric. The research team used a technique called diffusion spectrum imaging to enable them to visualize neurons or the neuronal orientations and discover that the brain is organized like a grid. Two additional science articles focus on the effects of pesticides containing neonicotinoids on bee colonies. One study found that the neonicotinoid called imidacloprid reduced the amount of food brought back to the exposed colonies by foragers and decreased the number of queens produced by 85%. A second neonicotinoid called thiamethoxam resulted in fewer exposed bees returning to the hive from foraging trips. Together, the studies provide significant evidence for the involvement of pesticides in what is called colony collapse disorder. A team of scientists publishing in Nature Nanotechnology demonstrated the famous wave-particle duality experiment with the largest molecules to date. Traditionally performed using individual photons of light, the recent study used thalocyanine and related derivative molecules, which contained over 100 atoms each. As future experiments will attempt to use larger and larger molecules, we may yet be able to understand the forces at play at the quantum Newtonian transition area. On Sunday, the director James Cameron became the third person ever to voyage to the deepest point on Earth, the Challenger Deep, located in Mariana Trench. Mr. Cameron is also the only person to ever make the 7-mile trip solo. While it might be tempting to see this single trip as a publicity stunt of sorts, it is more importantly heralding an important era of deep ocean exploration on our planet. On March 27th at 4:58 a.m. Eastern Time, NASA launched 5 rockets to the edge of space, each launch separated by just 80 seconds. The rockets are part of the ATREX, or Anomalous Transport Rocket Experiment mission, whose purpose is to study the high-altitude jet stream where our atmosphere comes into contact with outer space. researchers presented yet more evidence of briny liquid water on the surface of Mars this week at the Lunar and Planetary Science Conference in Texas. The lead researcher investigating the water indicating surface features called recurring slope lineae, Alfred McEwen, was quoted as saying, "No one has come up with alternative models that they believe, nor have we. So, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's got to be water on Mars, right?" An analysis of the West Antarctic ice sheet using Landsat satellite records from 1972 to 2011 by glaciologists at the University of Texas at Austin found that the floating ice shelves in the eastern Amundsen Sea embayment are losing their grip on the Antarctic terra firma. The shelf margins are disintegrating at an accelerated pace, suggesting that glacial ice flow into the bay is speeding up as the ice shelves themselves shrink. It's kind of a tongue twister there. Dr. Irving Weissman and colleagues published research in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences this week that might lead to a single drug to cure many kinds of cancer. The study shows that many types of primary tumors display a signaling molecule called CD47 that keeps the immune system from attacking and killing them. The team was able to use a CD47 blocking agent or antibody to reduce tumors not only in petri dishes but also in mice. Future studies will determine whether the antibody works in humans as well. A study published in the Archives of Internal Medicine found a correlation between frequency of chocolate eating and body mass. People who ate cocoa treats more often fell lower on the body mass index. And while this news might propel you toward the candy aisle at the grocery store, I feel obligated to remind you that correlation does not equal causation. The researchers still don't know how this effect might be caused or what, if any, role chocolate plays in metabolism. That said, I feel a little bit better about eating my chocolate treats after reading about this study. And that does it for this week's science news headlines. If you have any ideas of other science news stories for future weeks, or you just want to let me know what you think about these science news stories, you should email me at drkiki@drkiki.tv, or you can leave me a voicemail at 650-741-5454. That's 741-KIKI. Easy to remember, right? It's now time for a word from our sponsor. This episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle, which we all love. There are several easy ways to instantly access Netflix on lots of devices, and it's all your choice as to how you want to do it. So you can watch Netflix movies on Macs, PCs. If you have an iPad or an iPhone, you can use those, and even some Android devices. Additionally, you can watch on gaming consoles like the Xbox 360 or the PS3 or the Nintendo Wii if you have one of those at home. If you're not a gamer, you can also use one of the cheap and pretty easy to use set-top boxes like the Roku Box, Boxy Box, or Apple TV. And with Netflix, you can watch all the movies and TV episodes that you want instantly on any of these devices at any time, whenever you want to sit and watch something. And if you get interrupted or you have to stop in the middle of watching one of your shows or movies, you can stop and pick up where you left off on any other device. So say you were watching on the comfort of your couch, got interrupted, and then you had to get on a bus, you could pull out your mobile device and pick up where you left off watching your favorite show or movie on your mobile device. It's pretty seamless. I think it's a great service. So whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can access as many movies or shows anytime you want, whenever you want. It's great, and you can cancel at any time for free. So here's the deal. You can get 30 days of free access to Netflix. Just go to netflix.com/twit. That's netflix.com/twit. Go there right now. Be sure you use the URL netflix.com/twit and sign up. You'll get 30 days absolutely free. Seems pretty good. So we thank Netflix for their support of Twit and Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, and we hope that you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. All right. So now's the time where I usually bring in the expert, right? And I say, without any further ado, it's time to bring in the expert and blah, blah, give a big introduction to that person. But we're not going to do that today. Today, it's all about, like I said at the beginning of the show, you and me. We're going to have a conversation. I want to talk about sharing. I want to talk about sharing science, and I want to talk about sharing knowledge, and I want to talk about how it can create stronger local communities and strengthen communities from the ground up. I'm talking about guerrilla science tactics, people. That's what I'm working on. I have an idea. It's called Science in My Backyard. SIMBY for short, and I don't know whether or not this name is going to change in the future, but for the time being, it's SIMBY. Don't be NIMBY, be SIMBY, right? It's got a nice ring to it. So SIMBY is an idea that is based in radical collaboration, in the essence, creating curious communities. So in your urban neighborhood, I just want to find out from those of you in the chat room, how many people in the chat room right now know all of your neighbors? And if you're rural, if you're in a rural neighborhood, you probably know more of your neighbors, even though you're more distantly located with respect to them than people in urban environments. But how many people know your neighbors? Do you know all your neighbors? I got a yes from Big Ginge. No, and I don't want to. No, and frowny face from Titus saying that his neighbors know him. Replicant X3RO, no, 2 out of 9. Space Guy doesn't want to know his neighbors. Edgar Vallis says his grandmother lives across the street. Well, that's family. That's a little different. But, you know, it could all start with family. So the idea that I'm trying to work out, and it's in its infancy right now, is this idea of basically trying to bring neighborhoods together and use the knowledge base that exists within any neighborhood to use that as a resource. So you might be working on a project and you might need help with computer programming or some aspect of engineering, or it might be a science type project and you might need a little bit more information than you can glean from what you're reading online or from books that you might have. And a conversation with somebody who knows what you're dealing with might be really helpful, right? Or even someone who wants to tinker with the stuff that you're tinkering with. Could be great, right? And maybe there's somebody in your neighborhood who fits that bill, but you don't know because you don't know them. And that's a real shame. So what I think is, the other side of this as well, not just what people want, but there are lots of people in neighborhoods who have knowledge. Say maybe you're a retired meteorologist, or maybe you're an entomologist, or you're a really, really active, amazing gardener, and you've been doing it for years in your neighborhood, and you know a lot about the local climate and soil. And so there are all sorts of ways that people have knowledge about things that they can potentially share with other people. So, for example, I really like birds, and I think it would be really fun to go on a neighborhood walk in the evening. I live in a hilly neighborhood, and there actually are a couple of parks and stuff, but in the neighborhood, and we maybe go on a bird walk and try and figure out how many different kinds of birds are in the neighborhood. I think that would be a lot of fun. Or maybe, you know, get together with the local fire department and have like a special day of fire science and get people in the neighborhood to barbecue with the fire department. And, you know, you would build camaraderie and build community in this way. And so we have, that's the basis of the idea. And I see it as a sharing and a finding. People who want to share knowledge, people who want to find knowledge, right? We need to have a portal for that, some way that they can do that. So that's what problem number one. Problem number two is getting people to know about it or figure out how to use it. And then, problem number three is bringing in other or lots of different communities that have already gotten started. So we have citizen scientists, right? There are Science for Citizens is a great website that can help people find citizen science projects, or SciStarter. There's also Make Magazine and the Maker Hacker communities, DIY communities. Noisebridge is a hacker dojo in San Francisco, and there are many more of these places around. And there are also people talking about local the growth of local economies, where you're not going to go to a hardware store necessarily in the future. Somebody's going to have a 3D printer, and they're going to print you something. You know, you're going to need screws, and the 3D printer guy is going to print screws for you on the corner. So why not get to know all the people that might have stuff in your neighborhood and be interested in building this stuff up in your neighborhood, and like create local economy, create local understanding of environment, create local understanding and community. So it's the idea is to bring online to offline. So you go from the internet to real world and actually have local activism in science and knowledge affecting global change. So that's the idea. It's a very simple idea, right? Nothing big. Nothing big. It's like, I don't know. I see it as a framework or a tapestry that weaves a whole bunch of things that already exist together. But anyway, I need to look at the chat room now. People are a little upset that it would require leaving the house. Maybe, or you could invite people to your house. You can invite your neighbors over and you could say, let's watch an episode of TWiT and, you know, talk about it. Or let's watch an episode of Dr. Kiki's Science Hour and, you know, let's have some drinks. Let's chat about it afterwards. Maybe we'll use it as a conversation starter. Something like that would be so easy to do, right? Way to meet your neighbors. You know, something very easy. Politics and neighbors don't. I didn't say anything about politics. I said it's science or knowledge. It's not about politics. It's about information. It's about knowledge. It's not about local meetups, right? We could do local meetups of. You could make local meetups of some kind. Maybe people want to get together with other people in the neighborhood to talk about This Week in Science and what stories This Week in Science brought up, you know, like, or science news. It is like science networking. And so this is the point where it kind of, I keep running into problems when I start thinking about it. I don't want to create another social network, right? Because if I create just another social network, it's like, I'm going to get people over it to use it. And they're already using these other things. And it's just kind of a pain in the butt. So I have to figure out how to bring all sorts of social networks together, or how to get people using the SIMBY idea across multiple networks, if that's possible, or even just create some kind of a portal. But then the whole issue is like, it's the whole idea of the field of dreams problem. You know, if you build it, they will come, but not necessarily. Not necessarily. You could just be waiting and think that the ghosts are going to come play baseball in your field and they never show up. And then you're just the weird guy who built a baseball diamond in the field, right? Yeah. So anyway, yeah, if I build it, Space Guy, I will need a VC or grant funding. So grant funding, I think grant funding is where it's going to be. How I'm looking at funding this currently, because this would be educational. It's community building. It is a way of, yeah, maybe something Kickstarter-esque, like maybe different, but I don't know exactly what kind of Kickstarter would be a difficult way to get this going, because I'd have to really come up with goods that people would get out of this. And this isn't really a good. It's more of, it's a service. But it's not even really a service. It's a service that tries to bring people together. Padre SJ says, I am always the weird guy. Yeah, I'm always the weird girl. Sometimes it's just the lot. You get the straw you pick, right? We could do custom Dr. Kiki voicemails. That could work. Do you guys want a Dr. Kiki voicemail? I don't know. We could call it Dr. Kiki Science Community and get PBS funding. And maybe we could start it out as you doing Google Plus on-air hangouts. Maybe we could do some of that stuff. Yeah, so this whole idea that I'm talking about, the Sue is asking, so it doesn't exist yet? And I think you're referring to what I'm talking about. You might be referring to something else within the chat room. But no, this whole idea, it's an idea. It's in my head, and I'm just talking about it because I've decided that the more conversations I have with people about this idea, the more people might be interested in it, and the more something might happen. So I'm putting this out here and trying to get some momentum. And I can have conversations with people one-on-one, but this, I could talk to a lot of people at the same time, and it's just amazing. So I kind of had to do it. Yeah, the Dr. Kiki Neighborhood Project. Exactly. When I started thinking about it, it was the theme song from Mr. Rogers kept going through my head. Who are the people in your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? In your neighborhood? Yeah. Yeah. Who are they, right? I don't even know. I know a few. But really, I don't know what they do. There's the old woman across the street. Then there's the couple across the street. And then there's that other couple across the street. And right? This is ridiculous. Yeah, it's kind of... So the Sue says, how about a trade of expertise? And that's the kind of idea. So it could be a trade of expertise where you offer something that you are an expert at and somebody else offers it back. And I was trying to figure out how this could be developed into some kind of a game so that you build up some kind of points and you can get like badges or some kind of awards within the Simbi community, the Simbi neighborhoods, to show that you're really involved and that you're really doing a lot of work in this and putting a lot of effort into it. So I think that could potentially work. Web1954 says he likes the portal idea. Build a big tall fence, then cut a portal in it. Yes, like a wormhole. Yes. The Sue says that you can do the tech stuff and writing if someone else says something they can help you do or learn. So yeah, there are other groups that are working on more of expertise trading, where you have a skill that you would trade with somebody. I'm thinking of this as more of just sharing, so that it's not a direct trade, like a barter kind of a trade, but is specifically that, you know, one person in the neighborhood might be way more into this than other people, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that other people couldn't be interested in learning from that one person on multiple occasions. It could happen. let's see. iPad saying on the Mr. Rogers social network, there are no like buttons, just be my neighbor. Yes. Be my neighbor. Yeah, the Sue, so right. Not trade so much as teach, learn. Exactly. So that's kind of the idea. So maybe it's trading information and skills. So I'm thinking that there are some people like me, you know, my skills, very laboratory-based, very thought-oriented, not super practical. I know, I really honestly don't have a lot of practical skills. But when you come down to information that I can share, I have a lot of information. You know, I have some fun science demonstrations. I have some neat things that I would be interested in sharing. Or, you know, and maybe even just sharing conversation is something I'd be interested in doing. Shrensen says, you will attempt this society in Minecraft first. Okay, give it a try. Simbi Minecraft, right? Maybe I need to get started a Simbi Reddit, right? We need to start a Simbi Reddit page. What was somebody else had something that I missed? I need to scroll through the chat room. The chat room is great. You guys are just enjoying this idea, which, or at least you're enjoying talking about it. I like it. Right. So Tourist says another way to go is have a neighborhood science fair, and you have a 5 to 8 kids section. You could have a neighborhood science fair. Every, like, one weekend, just have as many people on the block as are interested have some kind of science demo in their garage. And then you can go from house to house to house and, like, and check out the science demonstrations, which could be really fun, right? And somebody here is saying that XYZ says they think that I'm trying to rehabilitate the chat room into being more social. It's not that I'm trying to rehabilitate the chat room into being more social. I just think that there is much to be gained in real-world interactions and the resources that exist right next door. And you, yourself, are probably an amazing resource. And somebody might be needing your skills who lives, like, right next door to you. You no idea. Sinterest. I like that. Scienterest. Yeah, Bill Hicks. Media convinced society that strangers are bad, so people stay inside and consume more media. Right. Every once in a while, it's kind of neat to get outside. Or if you're a tinkerer, or if you have some kind of project that you're working on, sometimes it's nice to share that with other people. Sharing's good, right? It can be good. Tondagosa, communication is a practical skill. Okay, thanks. At least I'm practical somewhere. Let's see. Effin Dunn says, you drive an hour to work every day to do digital content production. I imagine I'm driving past someone going into my town to do the same thing. We could job swap and drive less. Ha ha. That could work. Rural Urbanite, you like to take scientific jargon and break it down to plain English. And that's something that's really, really needed. I enjoy doing that, too. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually. Try and talk about something. Jacksonfly, you know how to make beer. Right, Justin. Making beer is one of the first human chemical experiments that that really affected civilization, right? It's amazing. You know, and there are just, if you think about it, there are lots of possible ideas and directions, ways this could go. You know, I think about it also as very often schools are a major part of communities, but only insofar as the kids that are in them and the parents that are associated with those children, the people that are associated directly with the school. So many times people stay in the neighborhood, but their kids no longer go to that school. And so they become disconnected from the school in the neighborhood. And so schools lose resources as kids pass through. So in addition, this could be a great way for teachers to find resources within the neighborhood that had been thought lost. So maybe that retired meteorologist might be interested in bringing a few kids from the 7th or 8th grade class in the neighborhood school to his hobby weather station. And maybe they can track weather. Maybe somebody would be interested in working with some kids in the neighborhood. And this isn't necessarily people working with kids. This is all ages. This is just getting people sharing information. So any way that you can imagine people wanting to find information that can be shared or wanting to share information, I just think this could happen. So pancake meet and greet. I love it. Steve Everett, can you invest? Not yet, but that would be really awesome. I still have a lot more details to figure out, of course, so I'm just trying to get ideas. iPad 07330 says we would have to limit the baking soda volcanoes to one per street. All right. Maybe we could put that in the subtext of our contract, right? Big Ginge says, I give my skills to everyone, no matter where they live. I think that's great, too. And so, that's why I'm not just saying this is a only real world thing, but I think it should focus a lot on real world interaction in the neighborhood. But I love the idea that it can meld and flow between where you are and other parts of the world. Maybe you can, people in your neighborhood can work on some kind of a citizen science project with neighborhoods in other parts of the world. Maybe you can, maybe we can use Google Plus to do it in real time and to do data collection in real time, or to compare results of experiments, or I don't know. Yeah, the Sioux says what we need is some kind of database for neighborhoods so you can see what people in the vicinity have to share. And I think that's a big point. And there are actually a couple of social networks that are trying to do that currently. And so one idea I have is to partner with a social network that's working on things at the neighborhood level. One company is called Nextdoor. I don't. There's another one that has something to do with an elephant in the title, but I don't remember. what that was. And then there's always Facebook or using. But everyone's on so many different social networks, so I have to winnow it down somehow. You know, focus on the vision of getting people involved and figure out how to do it. Space Guy says, on a serious note, I'm combining a lot of focused services, networks, groups, and clubs together in one place, which may be quite a big task, especially when we all have busy lives as it is. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to be one of the largest challenges to this. I think that in this particular situation, it's not necessarily trying to get people doing everything, but it makes it so that people aren't so siloed in their respective clubs or their respective social networks. But because you can get very, very focused on this one little part of the world that you exist in, and there's this whole bounty in the world around you that you might be missing out on that could potentially help with what you're doing in your little tiny attentional focus. So every once in a while, it's good to step back and see the larger picture to get more focused on what you want to be looking at specifically. I'm going to scroll down a little bit. Oh, chat room. And a point was made that not everybody has computers. And that's very true. More and more people today do have computers, so it's becoming less and less of a problem. But, this at the neighborhood level, you don't have to have a computer. Or if you have a computer and you're a super techie person who's into science, maybe you could share that with people who don't have computers in your neighborhood. Maybe there are people who are interested in it but just don't have the means to be able to do it. I mean, sometimes it's hard to bring other people into your life, and I know that's very difficult. Come into my house? What? No. Maybe we'll meet outside on the sidewalk or at a cafe. But it's good to get to know you one step at a time. Locke says, if my neighbors find out I can fix their computers, it's game over. Or maybe it's a more interesting game. Who knows? Oh, good. Chetpot sent me a link for chamilo.org. It's going to be featured on Twit's Floss Weekly next Wednesday morning. It's open source e-learning and collaboration. So that's something that I will be interested in taking a look at and actually seeing what they're doing and how they're working. I love the idea of e-learning and communications. That's great. Thanks for that link. Yeah, Jeff says there are people around where you are who don't even trick or treat to homes that they don't know. They caravan to trusted homes. Right. So in a sense, I mean, I remember growing up and trick or treating in the neighborhood. My parents, we knew the people in the neighborhood. I grew up out in a rural community, so it wasn't necessarily as frightening as some urban communities are today. But at the same time, one of the benefits to strengthening community bonds, neighborhood bonds, is that you get to know the more people in your neighborhood, and suddenly, you know, the old lady across the street isn't just a scary old lady. She's really interesting. She's had an interesting past who, you know, she just can't get out of the house. And so, you know, maybe it brings some new bonds in. Let's see. Scrolling, I'm way behind. Akiki's neighborhood iPhone app. Maybe that's where we will go. Yes, the iPhone app. people are saying phone app. Big Ginge runs a neighborhood management company, and trying to get people even to turn up to meetings is a job in itself. Yeah, and there are lots of people who don't socialize. You know, I'm not expecting that this is going to be everybody's cup of tea, of course, but I do think that it's in line with a lot of the current directions that so many communities are going. So online communities, like I mentioned, citizen science, makers, hackers, you can probably name many more. And if we can find a way to kind of get everybody working a little bit more together, not just online in the global perspective, but locally at the neighborhood level, it might make some differences. Titus wants to make his very own atomic clock to wake him up in the mornings. That sounds cool. Do it. Yeah. And so what got me thinking about this so much is that, in communicating science and working on things like Dr. Kiki Science Hour and This Week in Science, This Week in Science reaches a slightly different audience than Dr. Kiki Science Hour. But at the same time, I'm really still reaching people who are science enthusiasts, people who are pretty much already into science. There's, you know, I don't have to convince them that they want to listen to this show or be interested in it. You like listening to the science stuff, right? So you're going to want to listen to this. And local churches as well. I see someone in the chat room mentioning local churches. Exactly. Got to bring churches into this. It's breaking out of the science bubble, getting away from people who are only science enthusiasts, and trying to find a way to get science enthusiasts to infect other people with science enthusiasm. But surreptitiously, covertly, so that they don't really realize that it's science under the guise of science, because you're calling it SIMBY. You don't necessarily have to ever say science. You just talk about your awesome weather station and how you've been collecting data for, 3 years, and how this seems to be abnormal and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden you have people who are like, wow, I didn't know that you could do that. And you're talking about stuff. Mm-hmm. Scrolling down. If it were an iPhone app, if it were a Dr. Kiki iPhone app, that it would only be in the 1%. Right? It might not reach people. Patterson says, speaking of hacker groups, Darren is going to have a thing at Noisebridge on Friday on Wi-Fi hacking. If you're interested. That's the kind of thing people want to know about that, but you don't necessarily know to go to the Noisebridge website to learn about what's happening at Noisebridge. What is Noisebridge? You don't even know that it's necessarily in your community, right? If you live in San Francisco near the Mission District. Neil deGrasse. Oh, I like that interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'll have to bring that in a little bit later. David Lee Roth, I did not get any tickets, so I don't know. Sorry. I never got the tickets to your show. There's no reason. The Sue asks, why limit it to science? And that's exactly what I wonder. Why limit it to science? Why can't it also be just knowledge? So knowledge, science in itself is knowledge, right? In its very basic form, science is knowledge. Knowledge is power. And you start building knowledge within the community, spreading knowledge, increasing curiosity, and suddenly you have an increase in the power of your local community. And it could be a very, very changing thing. Let's see. So anyway, that's the idea that I've been throwing around in my head. And if you have any ideas about it, you know, I'd love to hear from you. So you can always email me, drkiki@drkiki.tv, or you can find me on Twitter or Facebook or Google+. I'm Kiki Sanford on Google+. And there are, I think, a lot of little tweaks that need to be worked out with this, but I'm trying to spread the idea. I'm trying to make this something that people might be interested in and want to talk about a little bit more, and maybe seeing if something change bringing can happen through SIMBY. So anyhow, I'm not going to keep this show going over long on this one particular topic. Let's see what I guess people have already in the chat room said that they don't really get out to, they don't know many of their neighbors as it is. Not many of you do, but a lot of you have things that you'd love to learn, have things that you would love to share, projects you'd love to work on, and just think for a minute. All I'd love you to do is think a little bit about how nice it would be for you to potentially draw on resources that might be in your neighborhood that you don't even know are there. Could be great. So there is a SIMBY page on Google+. If you would like to go there for more information or to follow the page for updates about SIMBY as we move forward with the idea, as it evolves, to keep in touch with it. And I think that's about all I have for this topic right off the top of my head. So I'm Dr. Kiki, and do you guys want to talk about any other science-y stuff? Is there anything in the chat room? We've got about 15 minutes left in the hour, so if anybody... Steve Everett, are you under a non-disclosure agreement on this? Yes, every one of you must sign an NDA. No. No. I just want this idea out there. I'm working on next week getting an interview for Dr. Kiki Science Hour with some archaeologists who are using satellites to do some really interesting work. I'm also working on trying to get an interview with a food scientist, a woman who creates foods and beverages that are used by the food industry. There's another interview that's coming up. And another interview that will be coming up in April is an interview with Dr. Emery Brown on anesthesia. So the science of anesthesia, that's going to be very, very fun. Let's see. Oh, Mariana Trench diving. Ah, yes. I would love to talk about the science of submersibles. Maybe I can get James Cameron on. But he's not really a scientist, but he's gotten really interested in the science of the ocean. So maybe we can talk to some scientists who work with James Cameron about going to the deep, deep Mariana Trench. That could be cool. Space elevators. Yes, that could be a good topic for a future show. I would love to talk about space elevators, and I know that somebody on Google+ has been contacting me about that recently, so that'll be something I will work on. The science of advertising, just talk to Jacksonfly about that one. I think more recent developments in the science of advertising are really interesting, involving neuroscience and perception and how the brain works and how advertisers are really starting to play with our psychology and our neuroscience and how the brain works to get us to do things. You think you make choices. No. How about interviewing somebody from Fermilab? That's a great idea, Jeff. I would love to do that. That would be a great idea. Yeah, I had somebody... I'm trying to work also on getting somebody in relation to the Grail Project so we can talk about the moon and what's going on with the moon. That's another interview I'm working on for the future. Great. The Sioux is following Simbi. Yay! I got one more follower. That's awesome. Write these down. I don't have any paper, pen, or anything. And if I start typing, this is going to go tickle, 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 clack, tickle, clack. Can somebody send me a list of these ideas? You all know how to contact me. Come on. Web4036 says, can I get enemies of science on and try to show them how nice scientists are? That could be an interesting one. That could be interesting. And I don't know that there are... Well, yeah, there are enemies of science, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, there are. Which I just don't understand at all. I don't get it. Cassini tasted ice geysers on Saturn's moon Enceladus. I will try. Saucy Donkey. That would be great. I've tried to get Carolyn Porco for an interview in the past, but... She's a hard woman to get to interview, so we will see if I can make that happen. I have a bunch of emails out to people. Slug has a friend who might be able to hook me up with James Cameron. Great. Yes, let's do that. Let's see what we can do. I'd love to talk with him about his trip. That would be so much fun. The Interdave says, I think it would be interesting to talk about all the various ways of getting things into space besides just rockets and a space elevator. That's a good point. Okay, so how do we get things off of this rock? Oh, speaking of which, there was a really interesting study last week. Was it last week that I wrote it down? Or was it this week? Maybe, I think it was from this week. A really interesting study of the Gliese 581, I think it's the Gliese 581 star system. And there are four planets that orbit pretty close to the star. And the star isn't as hot as our star, the sun. So they orbit more closely than we do. They're more like the distance from the sun that Mercury is from our sun. So they orbit around... There you go, Gliese 581, the exoplanets. They orbit around their star so rapidly. They move around so rapidly that there is no chance that life would jump from planet to planet. Like, the idea here in our solar system is that life might have started on Mars, and then meteor and comet impacts might have bounced rocks out of Mars that landed on Earth, and that they carried life to Earth, and that's how Earth got life. It's this panspermia, that maybe life moves from location to location, carried on little chunks of rock, and that it exists in pieces of mud or clay inside chunks of rock. And so in this particular situation, in Gliese 581D's case, it orbits around its star so rapidly that they modeled using computer models. So those of you who program computers and want a future in science, this is the kind of direction that you can go. They modeled what would happen with meteor impacts and the ejection of rocks from Gliese 581D, and they found that it really wouldn't make it that far. The rocks could get ejected, but then because the planet orbits the star so quickly, it would just run back into the rocks again. So basically cleans up anything. The planet itself vacuums up, cleans up anything that gets ejected from itself. So, yeah, interesting. So the likelihood of other solar systems having life jump from planet to planet is not necessarily as likely as it was to happen in our solar system. That's the take-home message. Very interesting. Mint says, what's the air makeup of Bon Earth, and can we survive there? Currently, no. Very unlikely that we would be able to survive there. But you never know. They're still looking at it, right? let's see. Scrolling down to the end of the chat room. Richard Branson needs to clone himself, says Jassus. The hair needs to live on. Yes. Oh, great. Yes, Slug, I like the way you phrase it. So the Gliese 581 system is a self-cleaning star system. Exactly. It's like a self-cleaning oven, but it's a star system. Exactly. Web657 says, can any life form from Earth survive in space? Yes. Bacteria. Archaebacteria. There are several species of bacteria. And if you think about humans on the space station, they're surviving pretty well in space. So all sorts of organisms from Earth can survive in space. But if you're talking about, say, on a rock traveling through space, not in a spaceship capsule, then the likelihood of a more complex organism surviving is a lot less than something that's a bit simpler, like a microorganism, like archaebacteria or something of that sort. Spores are very tough, and that gets to the Scott Sigler horror novels, Infection, Contagion, Pandemic, the little spores, those little triangle spores from outer space. Okay, so we're getting towards the end of the hour. I've gone way off topic. I'm having a lot of fun. Sly Ferret says, any chance of getting Mayim Bialik on the show? That could be interesting. That could be very interesting. I will think about that. I had not really thought about inviting her on the show, but she is a neuroscientist, and it could be interesting to talk about Big Bang Theory. So, yeah. Oh, Blossom, who is no longer Blossom. That would be fun. Great idea. I know a Sly Ferret. She went to UC Davis, got her PhD at UC Davis. Same alma mater as me. Okay, I'm coming to the end of the show here. I'm just, you know, jabbering on and filling time at this point, which I hope that you're enjoying. It's kind of fun for me to sit here and talk to you. So let's call it an hour, because I have another show to prepare for. You all know This Week in Science is my weekly science news discussion show with Justin Jackson. That's Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. Here, it broadcasts here on the Twit Network. You can also find out, you can view past episodes at twist.org. And I want to thank Brian here at Twit for helping out put videos on YouTube. We got videos on YouTube. Thanks to Brian. Thank you, Brian. And additionally, every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, I do Dr. Kiki Science Hour here at Twit. And on Fridays from noon to 1 p.m., I also do my science chat on Justin TV. So I hope you join me sometime. The science chat is a lot of fun. We just chat. It's kind of like the last part of this show. And I'll remind everybody to take a look at the Simbi Idea Google Plus page, to give it some thought, and mull it over for a little bit and let me know what you think. You can always contact me, Dr. Kiki at drkiki.tv, or any of the social network stuff. I think that does it for this week. And I will be back next week. And I want to thank you for tuning into my Science Hour. I really do appreciate the time that you took out of your week to share this hour with me. And remember, I only ask for 1 hour a week, right? Only 1 hour a week. It's such a little amount of time. 1 hour a week. And I do hope that it makes your world a lot more interesting. Now for your moment of science meditation.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero.
We have launched the Terrier Oriole.
LC2 ROA.
Plus 10.
LC2, go ahead.
Arm, MRL booster.
Plus 30.
MRL booster armed.
Plus 40. 1-0.
We have launch of the Terrier improved Malamute.
LC2 ROA.
Plus 10.
LC2 ROA.
LC2, go ahead.
Arm, universal pad booster.
Universal armed.
1-0.
Launch of the first Terrier improved Orion.
LC1 ROA.
Plus 10.
1. Mark, D0.
Launch of the second Terrier improved Malamute.
LC2 ROA.
LC2, go ahead.
Plus 10.
2-1-0.
Launch of the fifth and final Terrier improved Orion.
Plus 10. Plus 30. Plus 40.
If you're out there watching us, let us know if you see it.
There's the TMA release on your screen.
And so those were the rockets that I was talking about in the science news at the top of the hour, the ATREX experiment mission, anomalous transport rocket experiment mission, and the white smoke or clouds that you saw come out was a special chemical mixture that they ejected into the high altitude jet stream that could be tracked and traced and used to learn about how the high altitude jet stream interacts with space and the dynamics of that jet stream. So it's a pretty interesting launch footage.